Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, it's Jess. Before we begin, I want to warn you that this episode will contain discussions about domestic abuse and mental health. It's not an easy listen, and you might find some of the stories shared upsetting. If you or someone you know is affected by the issues surrounding our conversation, you can access information and support online. You can visit Refuge's website at refuge.org.uk, or you can call the National Abuse Helpline anytime for free at 0808 2000 247. And if you're struggling with your mental health, you can visit www.samaritans.org or call them for free at 116 123 for information, advice and support. All of these will be linked in the show notes. Hello. My name's Jess Phillips, and this is Yours Sincerely. Usually in this podcast, I give my guests a chance to celebrate three people who mean the world to them. Someone they love, someone who's no longer around, and someone who doesn't realise how significant a role they've played in their lives. But this week, we're releasing some special episodes to celebrate International Women's Day, and I'll be speaking to some truly inspiring women about the things they are fighting to change. Marlin Anderson is a podcaster, former Love Island contestant, and the author of Positivity is Our Superpower, Everything I've Learned About Trauma, Grief, Confidence and Self-Love. After experiencing domestic abuse at the hands of her ex-boyfriend, Marlin decided to share her story and talk about the physical and psychological abuse she lived with and the PTSD she faced in the years since her ordeal. Now she's a motivational speaker and outspoken advocate for women who've experienced domestic abuse. Hello, Marlin. How are you?
Hello. I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm going to start, Marlin, with your name. You've got an interesting name. Is it slightly Scandinavian?
It is. I was born in Sweden.
Oh, yeah. I could tell. Look at me. I feel like really educated now that I that not the, so much the Marlin bit, but the Andersson bit.
With a double S.
Yeah, with the double S made me think you were Scandi. I've never met another Marlin before.
It's a really common name in Sweden.
Is it?
It's like Emma is in England.
Really?
Yeah, so it's really common, but it's not here.
I've never been to Sweden, but I'm due to go this year because my husband's family, lots of them live in Sweden, and one of them's getting married. I'm looking forward to going over there. I hear the booze is really expensive and the furniture's really nice. That's my main review.
IKEA.
Yeah, I mean, well, I suppose I feel like I've been to Sweden because I've been to IKEA so many times. So obviously this podcast is about letter writing ordinarily. Are you much of a letter writer? You're quite young.
I am. I'm more of a journaler.
Oh, are you?
I've journaled my whole kind of like life, I think, even from when I was a little kid. But I used to write letters when I was younger, and it actually got me into trouble once. I used to write letters to the teachers and stuff about how I really felt. I had a supply teacher once and I didn't really like her. She was quite mean, and I left a letter for my usual teacher, and I put it on the desk saying about how not nice his supply teacher was, and the supply teacher read it and I got in trouble. But honestly, when my mum or me had a little argument or when I felt sad, I'd write a letter and put it under her door in her bedroom, and I've always written letters. And
I mean, that's lovely.
In journaling, yeah.
I often, when I write letters, it is usually because I'm feeling sad, like, and I want to get something out onto a piece of paper. It feels like cathartic to write it. Often I don't even send those letters, which is maybe where you went wrong with your supply teacher.
Yeah, 100%.
Should have just written it down.
Yeah, I do a lot of letter burning where I write a letter of what I want to get rid of, then I'll set it on fire.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is, I'm going to try that later on. Obviously, anyone listening, please be careful when setting things on fire. I spend a lot of time with the fire service in my constituency. They would not be grateful for me encouraging people to set things on fire. Do it in a controlled environment. Whilst we normally on this podcast talk about letters, this is a bit different, and I'm speaking to different women about the letters they would like to share, not with individuals, but with the women of the world. So what is the letter that you'd like to share today with the women of the world?
So my mum left me a letter. She left all of us a letter when she died, right? And she said to not open it until her funeral. And so me, my sister, and my two brothers got a letter. It was in gold paper. She'd handwritten it. And it was actually quite sad. She'd handwritten like 3/4 of it, and then the rest of it was typed because she was unable to physically write it. It was so, so sweet, but also very emotional to read. And it was very personal. So I'm not gonna read that.
Yeah.
The one thing she did write was a lot of random notes to herself. And it spoke a lot about resilience when she was going through her cancer. Obviously, she lost her husband when she was younger, my dad, and then she battled cancer 3 times. And one of the notes she'd just written on a little pad, and she'd had it next to her bed, and I found it in her bedside drawers when we were clearing out her bedroom. And it said, just remember that your resilience always lies within and that you are stronger than you know. And that's always stuck in my head ever since. So for any woman listening, all of us have this resilience that lies within us, and it's up to us whether we choose to use it and find it. And in my life, there have been a lot of cases where I've felt very weak, felt alone, felt isolated. When I was going through my abusive relationship, I felt like I had no way out. And I remember just that little note in my head, and I managed to find some sort of resilience that led me out of the darkness into the light. So that would be my little kind of takeaway.
Yeah. That is, I mean, it is amazing how people have to become, they have to be able to tap into that resilience at times. And it does feel like women have to tap into it a great deal in the course of their lives. But your mother losing a husband and then having cancer and leaving, you know, relatively young people behind, so how old were you when your mum died?
I was 25, so...
Yeah, so I mean, that's no age really to lose your mom, is it? And you mentioned there your previously abusive relationship, which is, I suppose, one of the things that we wanted to talk to you about. And obviously, it's a sort of horrible experience that you've been through. So I wondered if you wanted to explain that a little bit.
Yeah, funnily enough, I met him like a few weeks after my mom had passed away. I was in a vulnerable time in my life where I was grieving. And I was trying to numb the pain. And I think I met him when I was at my lowest, and that's what they tend to do, right? They grab you when you need someone or when you think you need someone. And it was horrible. And when I think back to it now, it's all a bit of a blur, but I became pregnant within a few months, and that led to the relationship becoming more controlling and more abusive. And I think the worst thing for me was when I became pregnant, I decided to name her after my mum, my daughter, Concy. And the pregnancy was so volatile and stressful. When she stopped moving in my stomach, I instantly just thought, it's all because of him. And so she was born at 7 months. She survived for a month, and then she passed away. And so this was only about 6 months after my mum had died. And I thought, Jesus Christ, like, what the heck is going on? And I just looked at this guy who'd given me so much hell. Even throughout my stay in Great Ormond Street, he was still being abusive behind the scenes, and the nurses clocked on and stuff like that. But I just wanted to find a way out. And I truly believe that my daughter was like, I'm not, you know, I'm leaving. I'm not going to be here. I'm saving you from him. And honestly, the only way to get away from him was for him to get arrested and me having zero contact, because it was so damaging to my mind, the way they rule you back in and hoover you back in constantly. I remember him smashing doors in to get to me, creating different accounts, any emails, and it was like I'd never get away. And Yeah, he broke my hand. That was the last that I remember seeing him. And then I finally went to the police and that was the end of it. But it's very hard to escape an abusive relationship, not just the physical abuse, but the emotional attachment you get with it, the lingering effects after you leave an abusive relationship because of the gaslighting and the confusion. Mm. The Freedom Program actually saved my life because I educated myself on it and I educated myself on what was happening to me. I remember Googling or YouTubing, well, what is a narcissist? And I was like, all these aha moments of me being like, oh my God, he did that to me and that happened to me. Mm. By educating myself, I was then aware of what was happening. But this is why I feel very strongly about education, especially in schools on domestic abuse, because it starts so young. I remember I did a talk in St. Albans at school for girls, and a few of the teenagers were crying because they're in an abusive relationship and they're, 16 years old, 15 years old?
When you said that you were Googling, like, to look for it, it does seem to me like there is an abuser's hand guide somewhere on the internet because they all do the same bloody thing.
Well, why, though?
The complete and utter lack of originality in the perpetration of domestic abuse. They all follow the same patterns, isolate you, get some manner of control over you, in your case, pregnancy, and also, who to look for, looking for specific vulnerable women at vulnerable points in their lives. It's like, oh my God, they are basic.
Is it genetic or what is it? I'd love to go to jail and speak to like 10 different abusers and just be like, what the? Line them all up and be like, why are you all the same? Like, it baffles me.
It's because of the relative position in society. The way I try and explain it to people and the sort of best way that to get people to understand it who aren't abusive or might not have lived with abusive partners is that because of women and men's relative position in society, women are still lower in society. We earn less. We're much more likely to be out of the labour market. We have less political power, we have less economic and social power. And so we can be controlled. And the only way that I can get people to understand, because obviously there's millions of examples where I'm much more powerful than my husband, for example. So of course there are anecdotal, but as a social class, women are still less powerful than men. This is sort of harrowing to say, but it is true. Like, I speak to my children sometimes in a way that I would never, like, if I was cross at a colleague who was equal to me at work, I would never be like, oh my God, and start railing, like, my God, why do you never put your shoes up? Like, why do you never send the emails? I would never do that, but I do it with my children. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing abusive about it. I just lose my rag with them in a way that I wouldn't. And it's because they have less power than me.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, like, people never grope up. You don't grope someone who can sack you. You only grope someone you can sack. So it's about your relative position and power. And so vulnerable women in vulnerable situations, they are likely to be groomed and found by these people.
But they try and knock strong women too that do have that.
Oh, God, yeah, you can be. Well, like I said, I mean, since I became a member of parliament, lots of members of parliament have come forward to me and said that they have been victims of domestic abuse while they were members of parliament, or women who are lobby journalists, who are incredibly eminent and powerful, like political editors of newspapers and things, have come forward to me and spoken to me about abuses that they have suffered. So, you know, you could, but it doesn't matter how powerful a woman is, society, we live in a patriarchal society and it still places women and also there is a physical thing, isn't there? We are physically weaker in lots of cases and so can be controlled with physical violence.
Yeah, but even a female that is super sure of herself, confident, has high self-esteem,
can be
herself,
a victim,
loves herself, that this narcissist can take, use all of his energy to knock this person down gradually. And that's the most dangerous thing about it, because it happens so gradually that when you become essentially nothing and your self-esteem has disappeared, that's what they've done. They've won then. And that's what baffles me. Why do they go to that much effort to do that, to belittle and diminish someone?
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know, yeah. I mean, what the motivation is just because they can. But yeah, it's fascinating to sit and talk to perpetrators of abuse. Like, you know, and I don't think that we should discount doing that. actually, to get an understanding. And actually, we all know them. So we all know that we know and love survivors of abuse. But if you all know and love survivors of abuse, then you must all know and love perpetrators of it. It's much easier for people to admit that they know and love those who have been victimised, but not. But you must do, because otherwise, statistically, there's one man who's just abusing all the women and you just happen not to know him. And we talk about people like Harvey Weinstein and we say things like he's a monster. And I hate that, because he's not a monster. He's just like lots of men that you know and work with and have come across in your life, and many of them you love. And actually, we've got to get to a better place of talking about it. I mean, you were one of the, you said actually, I mean, which I think is interesting, you said when you were speaking that, you know, it ended for you when you called the police, and that is not a common experience for lots and lots and lots of people. The moment which they call the police often increases their risk in some cases, but also they find that they didn't get a particularly good service. So you obviously had a different experience.
No, it was the fourth time I'd call the police.
I didn't like to assume, but somebody who's worked in this field for a long time, I did assume.
Three times they were locked down, and then I kind of like dropped the charges. He'd got into my head again, and I was like, oh, I'm in love with him, you know. And then it was the fourth time, and my friend just looked at me and was like, look what he's done to you. I'm taking you to the hospital, to A&E. And we're going to speak to the police. And that was just something came over my body. And I just thought, I can't, never again.
Yeah. And you successfully had him convicted as well, didn't it?
Yeah, but it was 12 months. And then he served like half of six and then got out like after 4 months because he was good in jail. So
I mean, it's pointless.
It's quite important, all of that for that.
Was it a summary offence? Battery or actual ABH or
GBH and common assault.
GBH, yeah, common assault. Yeah, that is that's what most cases of domestic abuse. And you know, the idea that 6 months in prison without any other intervention means that he's not a risk to other women is just mad.
But do you know what's interesting? He pled not guilty right up until like a week, 2 weeks before during court,
and then he changed his plea.
Yeah, that's a little tactic. But he pled not guilty to spitting on me, and spraying deodorant in my eyes, which was caught on video. But he pled guilty to like breaking my hand. So I found that really bizarre. Like,
I imagine because of issues to do with different charges. So coercive, you know, I'm afraid to say, as somebody who's been through now thousands of these cases, it's tactical.
Yeah.
There's nothing human about it. It's usually tactical based on charging and like, so all the events rather than, so if you make it an incident rather than a pattern, it's a lesser charge. It's a horrible jockeying of a horrible system that is designed far more for the accused than it is for the victims, I'm afraid. So signs would you encourage other people to look for? Did somebody, you said that you spoke to one of your friends. Did people try and help you?
Yeah, but you don't listen to anyone, do you? When you're in a situation like that, you're like, oh, shut up. I know what I'm doing. I'm fine. And also, I think there's a bit of embarrassment involved and shame, you know. And it's weird, like, the way trauma runs through your body when something that happened in a fight or flight mode, the trauma ingrains in you so hard that you kind of instantly forget about it when they've done something nice to you. So it's like it never happened. So the guy might buy you flowers, say sorry, beg for you back, and you'll instantly forget the bad thing that happened. And then it happens again and it just repeats this cycle. But my friends noticed it because I was always with him. I didn't really see my friends that much. And I slowly started to stop seeing my sister. And then it became very isolating. But the warning...
Well, that was on purpose. He isolated you on purpose.
Yeah, 100%. And do you know what's annoying? You know, when they call them red flags and like, by then it's too late. Like, you're already in. And so the signs, I think, looking back now, would be the love bombing at the beginning, the being overly nice, so overly nice that this actually really weird when you, in hindsight, you look back. Like over texting, messaging, wanting to meet, presents, gifts, and then slight gaslighting, slowly making you question things, making you doubt yourself, giving you paranoia, cheating, I think. A lot of them are cheaters.
Yeah, I agree, actually. And that's funny that you say that, that is often, that doesn't often get discussed in much of the literature or in much of the policy about it. But in almost every case that I come across, especially when you're talking about the abuse of younger women, especially where the pattern of abuse has been in pregnancy, they're going off and cheating during these periods. I've seen it again and again enough, so maybe it's anecdotal in my brain, but I do think that there could be some study about that particular thing.
Definitely. That was, well, he cheated so much when I was pregnant. And the insecurity, I just felt awful when I was pregnant, always wondering where he was. I started to find myself losing my own head over it. And he'd make me think, he'd make me think I was crazy, essentially. Say, oh, you're crazy. You're just imagining it. You're overthinking it. I would never do that. And then I found raw evidence. Even when I had raw actual evidence of him cheating, he'd still deny it. So they're pathological liars as well. What else? There's obviously the physical abuse, the manipulation, the anger. It started off with like throwing things to us, like objects, and then it got to me. Just so many little things, and when you put them all together, it's like, oh.
How long were you with him for?
About a year.
That's an amazing amount to happen to you in a year. Yeah. That is an amazing
amount. It happened really quickly with him.
Yeah.
And then funnily enough, like, I dated a few guys in the past, like, 3-4 years since him. And any quick sign that I saw, I'd be like, on your bike.
Yeah. Off your pop.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, I've got, like, these goggle, like, vision now.
What practical steps do you think that we need to put in place to help victims of domestic abuse then?
I think more than just a little poster in the hospital.
Yeah.
I remember sat there with a broken hand. Oh, I'm going to text this number and tell them I'm upset. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
The Freedom Program was actually recommended. I didn't have a clue it existed. And my best friend at the time was like, you're coming here, I'm taking you. And I didn't even know it was there. So I think we need more like mainstream adverts. We need more conversations, more in schools, starting young, educating the young. Because that's where it all begins. If we have knowledge on it, we can prevent it. Prevention is better than cure.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you'd been told, if you'd done the Freedom Program when you were 16.
Yeah, exactly.
You'd have been in a, you know, 100%. In a better position. For those that don't know, the Freedom Program is a program invented by a woman called Pat Craven that is all about understanding the abuser and what they have done to you. So it's sort of like the idea of the models of the different different manipulations that you have to go through in order to create the environment where you can then control somebody. And it's a fascinating program, but also it's done like a peer support, isn't it? So you're there with other women who have been in a similar situation, and actually that's the brilliance of the Freedom Program. It's that peer support. I used to run it. I used to be a Freedom Program. We used to run those programs because I worked at Women's Aid for years. So that's the thing, is the group practice of being with other women in a similar situation to you.
Jess, when I would hear another woman talking about what they're currently going through, what they did go through, it makes you just think, wow, you know, it makes you feel less alone, but it also makes it feel more real. And it just, as you said, they're all just cloned, aren't they? It's crazy.
I know. It's like, they're so basic bitches. They all do the same things. It's as if there is a guide, like a tosser's guide on.
Well, what's that poem, I'll buy you flowers? Literally, they all buy you fucking flowers.
Yeah.
You heard the poem, someone wrote it. It's like, oh, we'll hurt you or something, but then I'll buy you flowers. It's a really good poem, flowers. But it's not so true. Yeah. They just bloody buy you flowers and think it's all right.
Yeah, my husband buys me flowers just because he likes me. You know,
not for saying
because he's horrible, just because he's a nice fella. Bought me some tulips. They're the ones to marry. The ones who, you know, will put the bins out and like do the housework. Marry that man. The one who'll make you a baked potato when you've got a cold.
Oh my God. But do you know what? Honestly, when you've left an abusive relationship, my view of men became so distorted. I could still say right now, I don't actually know or understand what real love it feels like. I've never experienced real love. And that's a sad thing, I think.
Well, you know, as somebody, I've been married for nearly 18 years, very happily and successfully. And, you know, in a not dissimilar situation to you, I was young. I got pregnant within 3 weeks of us being together. There was a whole lot of jeopardy involved in that. But what I would say, what real love feels like, is nothing like what you're told it feels like as a kid. It's just about partnership.
Yeah.
It's just about, it's friendship more than it is anything else. It is trust and feeling safe.
Yeah.
Like, so whenever I feel unsafe, I think I'll be all right once I get home. Like, that's what love feels like. That's how your mum made you feel, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
The love you have with your parents, it's not dissimilar. It should make you feel safe. And it's not about flowers cards and shit like that.
The psychological abuse that they put you through, when I've started talking to really nice guys, like they're so nice, they're so genuine, I think there's something wrong there. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
you know, and I'm like, shit, what's wrong with me? Why do I want these bastards? Because I don't want a bastard.
Women, we are told that we want the bastards. So I told my husband that I didn't want to go out with him because he was too nice for ages. Oh my God, no, definitely marry the baked potato guy.
Don't stop it. I'm going to be thinking about that now. I've been chatting to a really nice guy and I'm like, oh, but he's too nice. So I'm going to think, no, he's going to make me a fucking baked potato.
He's going to make you a baked potato, honestly. And then you'll be like, you know, come home from work. He's been at work all day and he'll be like, yeah, love, I'll make the dinner. And you'll think, marry him immediately. Marry that man immediately.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
People like you speaking about your experiences, and I've got to say, what you've been through, you know, domestic abuse, and it's hard enough for people, but to have had a baby and then for her then to have died is, that's I would say most people's idea of the worst thing that could ever happen to you. And to remain resilient throughout that is, you know, that is phenomenal. You must feel proud of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. No, I do. Looking back at the place I was in mentally, trying to kill myself, like wondering, will this ever end? Will, like, you know. And I honestly, when people go, how did you do it? I don't actually know. I think I just took one day, each day as it came. Gradually, you know, went from numbing myself with wine, not wanting to see anyone, until I got to a point where, okay, Marlon, you can either die or you can live and make something of your life now, and make your mum and your daughter proud. And I think this is where I say there's resilience in all of us. It's just that moment when you just go, I want to start living. I don't want to be living in hell. You know, I want this life that I'm living right now to be a good one and to try and make it a good one. And that's what I did.
Yeah. Those that have died aren't grateful for you living sadly.
Yeah.
They're grateful for you living happily.
Yeah.
How would you sign off a letter to the women of the world? What would you say to them?
I would say that you're worth so much more than what someone says you're worth. And by that, I mean seeking validation and love from a place of darkness and wrongdoing will never amount to self-love and the love that you would have for yourself. So I'd say build on the love that you have for yourself, because once you love yourself fully and wholly, all you can do is attract other people that will love you that way back, because you'll know what it actually looks like and what it feels like. And I think that all my insecurities I had growing up and eating disorders and patterns of abuse came from me not loving myself enough to understand that I deserve so much more than that crap, you know? So start with loving yourself first in the most purest and wholesome form and take it from there. Sounds so clean.
No, no, but it's excellent advice. I always say to women, like, if there was somebody doing like a protest outside your house and they were holding banners about how shit you were, would you go out and join in with that protest?
No.
Obviously you wouldn't. And yet you are your worst critic. Yeah. Like, nothing anyone can say to me will come anywhere close to what I've said to myself. So don't join the rally. Marlin, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You're an incredibly strong and inspirational woman. So thank you so much, and happy International Women's Day.
Thank you for having me, and happy International Women's Day to you too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Yours Sincerely with Jess Phillips. If you want to hear more conversations just like this, make sure you click the follow button now on the app where you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on social media. We're at Jess Phillips Pod. This has been an Audio Always original.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.